about what our next step is, whether we stay here for the winter or move, and if we decide to leave, where are we going? She liked to lay out equations, if then statements, when possible. My family is alive. They're coming for me. It was too crazy when I spoke to my dad, but when spring hits, he's going to come up to New Hampshire. My entire family is coming. I have 3 uncles and 2 cousins. If things calmed down sooner, they might be in Hanover now. Greg said this to her 12 times in the last 3 days. Greg, I know this is hard to understand, but do you know how crazy you sound? You have to face reality. It's you and me and maybe a few other survivors somewhere else, but your family is dead. I'm sorry. I don't want to be mean, but you can't keep making decisions based on an idea that has no basis in reality. They weren't sick. I'm not sick. They lived. I know it. They're coming for me. They may be waiting for me up there. Either way, I have to get to Hanover. My parents died, and I'm still alive. Surviving doesn't mean anything. Greg, they're gone. You said it yourself. Your mother was sick. You know that means the rapture was in your house. Think about part of what you just said. Do you really think they would stay in Hanover and not come to get you at school? That they would just wait for you up there? Come on. Even you have to realize how crazy that sounds. Rebecca was stuck. Greg was going to Hanover. She knew it. She was not attached to her current setup, but it made more sense than moving north to a small town in the middle of nowhere. She had food, water, wood, a fireplace. She knew the area. She could hunt or trap in the woods by the barn. She was comfortable, at least in the short term. Hanover was an unknown. Could they find appropriate shelter? How bad was the looting? Were supplies available? She worked through the pros and cons of leaving her house, her safety net. If Greg was going to commit to a new life, he had to be convinced that his family was dead. The only way to convince him was to have them not show up in Hanover next year. Greg was now the most important thing in Rebecca's life. Staying with Greg superseded everything. Look, Rebecca, he started. Shh, I'm thinking. She put her hand up to stop him from talking. She knew the facts. She was formulating an opinion. Did you just shush me and give me the hand? Are you serious? He grinned. He had gotten to know her in the last 3 days, and he liked her. A lot. He was not in love with her romantically, but as a person, she was one of the best he had ever met. Rebecca was funny, practical, whip-smart, and compassionate. When she held him by the barn during his meltdown, she had true empathy for him. Greg was weak when he arrived at her doorstep. Rebecca opened her doors to him, gave him food, shared her supplies. After 3 days together, he trusted her implicitly. He would walk through fire for and with his new friend. The shushing was new. She was forward with her decisions, Greg noticed, but she was never as domineering as she had just been. If we go, we have to go in the next 2 days. It's November. I don't know how there is not snow on the ground already. There might be ice on the roads to Hanover. Snow means we're stuck here until spring. We have to decide how we're going, which car we take, and what items we take. If we go, you and I have to realize we're up there until May. Do you even know where in Hanover we're supposed to go? Greg could not believe she was agreeing to go. He was struck dumb. Are you kidding me? You don't even know where we're supposed to meet? Just Hanover? It's a good thing you're cute, Greg Dixon, because you are not impressing me in the smarts department. Let's have some breakfast and start making lists. I guess we can just find a house when we get up there. I'm glad we aren't meeting your family in Boston or New York City, she teased. What's with the 180 on going? He was finally able to speak. If you say your family is going to be in Hanover in the spring, well, We have to be there. Now is the last chance we have to travel. She was lying, something she vowed never to do to him.
I don't believe you, but I understand. We're not separating, and you know I have to go. It's okay if you don't believe my family is alive. I'll believe enough for the both of us. You get me up there and keep me alive until spring. That's your job. Don't let me do anything else stupid, like uprooting two people who were safe with ample food and shelter and move them to an unknown place based on an idea that is most likely insane.
Let's make some lists, she said, looking at him and putting her hand on his shoulder. I hope I'm wrong about your family. I'll keep you alive until the spring. And I'll try to keep myself alive, too.
They smiled. In 3 short days, they were best friends, like 2 kids transferred to a new school at the same time, stuck in a place with no other friends. They bonded. They knew how lucky they were to find and like each other. Greg considered finding Rebecca to be the luckiest thing that had ever happened to him. Greg moved the barn blanket hanging above the portico and stepped into the cold kitchen. It was his turn to collect eggs for breakfast. Their house had a 6-foot privacy fence around the backyard, but Greg was able to see a wild turkey 2 yards over. It was walking in the grass looking for food.
Rebecca!
He yelled. She came through the blanket door quickly.
What's wrong?
She was scared he saw other people. Bad people.
Look at that! It's a turkey! Do you think we can get it? I'd love to have fresh turkey.
I don't think we can catch that turkey. First of all, despite what you probably think, that is a bird with wings that can fly away if we try to grab it. If you want to look very dumb, you can try to catch that bird. I'll make breakfast while you do. I specialize in looking dumb, particularly around you, smarty pants. I bet the breakfast dishes I catch it. He did not like being told he could not do something. He also felt dumb for thinking turkeys could not fly, though he did not admit it to Rebecca.
Deal, and good luck. I'm going to enjoy this.
Rebecca went back through the blanket door to put on a sweatshirt. She wanted a front row seat for Greg's hunt. Greg turned and went into the garage. He looked around for a hoe or scythe or something he could use to whack the bird. He settled on a hoe, but it was one that was hollow in the blade area. It looked like a metal trapezoid on the end of a long stick. Rebecca's father loved the tool. It broke up topsoil in his garden. Rebecca brought it over from her house to start a garden with in the spring. Greg believed he could get the metal trapezoid around the turkey's neck and yank quickly to snap it. He might behead the bird altogether. Worst case, he would try to hit the turkey with the hoe. He was a baseball player and would use blunt force. He thought about using a gun, the pistol from his pack. Rebecca had several guns, too, but they were nervous about attracting other people with the sound. He considered throwing something heavy at the bird, a baseball bat or an axe, but he did not see such a tool available. Rebecca did not have an axe in the garage. She found all of her firewood already chopped. Greg wished he had a baseball or a lacrosse ball, but neither were available. Greg needed to hurry. He held the hoe, practiced the snare and jerk, and decided it was his best option. The side door of the garage creaked open, and he walked outside. It was cold. Rebecca was right. They had to leave this week, or winter was going to make their decision for them. The garage door opened outside the backyard privacy fence. He walked towards the turkey, blocked by the fence until he got to the end of his yard where he could see the bird. It had not moved. It was pecking the ground, oblivious to him. Greg took the obvious approach. He walked towards the bird slowly and steadily. When he was close enough, he would bring the hoe down on the bird's head. The turkey was about 25 yards away from him. It was big from the kitchen window, but even larger up close. Greg guessed it weighed at least 35 pounds. He was 5 yards closer, walking slowly. Nice, even movements. 5 yards closer. The bird looked up, flapped its wings, and flew away. Greg did not want to turn around. When he did, Rebecca was doubled over, laughing at him through the window. She opened the kitchen door to get the eggs. Now that was funny. Yeah, I'm a clown. At least I'm trying. He knew he looked foolish. He deserved the ridicule.
That promise to keep you alive? It's going to be tougher than I thought.
She laughed harder. Greg laughed at himself as he waved her off. He walked back with his head down and his shoulders slumped.
Now we know there are turkeys near here. Maybe we can catch one, he thought to himself.
I'll clean up breakfast. Big man hunter, no catch food, he joked loudly as he came through the kitchen door.
I took it easy on you. We're doing soft-boiled eggs for breakfast, no pan to clean. I sliced some of your bread from last night. I didn't realize how much I missed bread, and I'm still in awe of your bread-making skills.
A pot hung over the fire. Greg saw 6 medium eggs cooking in the water. There were slices of bread waiting to be toasted. I wish my turkey-catching skills were half as good. Rebecca made breakfast while Greg thought about catching a turkey.
When did you know you were a genius? Greg asked.
I don't know. I mean, school has always been easy for me. I'm not a nerd. I'm a regular kid. I like the same things kids our age like. I just do well at school, and puzzles, and planning. If you want to know when everyone else realized, I guess it's when I was in kindergarten and I was reading Harry Potter. All of the Harry Potters in a week. There are a lot of kids that read books in kindergarten, but I was tested, and I skipped to 3rd grade. I completed grades in about half the time. I couldn't skip the work. My parents were very adamant about making sure I read and did all the same work as other kids. I had to read the required books and take the required exams. It created a time constraint to moving up in grades, but I was about to finish high school. This was my last semester. I was going to be done before Christmas, but I couldn't start college until a new term began. She looked at the pot as she spoke. I get the work wasn't hard. Was it hard being 13 and a senior? Has it been 7 years since you took classes with kids your own age? It must have been tough. Greg thought he understood. He felt out of the loop when he came back to Charleston after his first year at Hightower. He hung out with his brothers and family because his social structure was gone. It was one of the reasons he went to baseball camp early and returned to where he belonged.
It's all I've known. I don't know if it was more difficult or not.
School is hard socially, whether you or me going through what I had to deal with or you dealing with whatever you had to deal with. There are bullies and mean people all over. I might have been insulated more, adults paying special attention to me because I was younger. I don't know. I never had it different. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. School is rough no matter how you do it. Same age group or advanced.
They sat in silence for a few moments before Greg asked another question.
So why did you really decide to come up to Hanover? What was your thought process?
Greg liked the way Rebecca thought, systematically and logically. He was curious why she changed her mind about leaving their current location.
You're right. I don't think your family is alive.
I'm sorry, but it doesn't make sense. I hope they are, but I don't think they are. She stopped. The timer dinged to take the eggs out of the water. She used a slotted spoon to pull each egg out and put them in paper bowls. She would use the hot water to wash clothes later. She placed the bread to toast on the wired rack sitting above the fire.
Make sure I don't burn the toast while I'm talking, okay? Rebecca asked.
Greg nodded in response, though he knew she could multitask.
I like our current digs, she continued, but there are flaws in the location. This house is new.
It's not colonial. We already modified it to trap warmth with the blankets. It isn't that cold yet. When the temps drop low, I have no idea how cold this house will get. It might get too cold for us to use.
The homes in Hanover?
There's a strong possibility we can find one much older, brick,
set up for the extremities. We might find a wood stove, bigger fireplaces, bedrooms with fireplaces. We might improve our situation. She flipped the bread and continued. I'd also like to find a place near water. We don't have water here. We were going to have to move in the spring. Why not make a move now? We can reassess in the spring in Hanover. Eventually, I think we'll end up somewhere other than New England. But if we're going to find out the truth about your family, we're going to stay in the north for at least the next 9 months, right? Greg nodded in response. I know you won't ditch me, but I won't make you suffer. If I know we're going to leave this house anyway and I have questions about its viability, well, it makes sense to leave this house now. Hanover seems to be a decent place. We'll have a river, lakes to fish, mountains to hunt. There are stores we can use to find things we might need. As long as we can get up there safely and we take all my food, I decided it was not only a viable option, it's probably the right option. She used metal tongs to take the bread off the toasting rack. Wow, Greg said. I'll be honest. I thought you were going to say you agreed because I'm cute. He took his piece of toast from her outstretched hand. Rebecca blushed. She did not expect his response. You keep your ego in check, Greg Dixon. We have a lot of planning to do, and being cute is not going to help you through a long Hanover winter. He laughed and cracked the eggs onto his toast. They sat across from each other. She was on the fireplace hearth while he sat on one of the couches. There was a coffee table between them. She mixed orange juice concentrate for them during his turkey hunt. Do we have a large truck? Did your store have a delivery van or anything like that? Greg was not going to let Rebecca do all the heavy lifting with regards to the planning, although he knew she probably had their trip planned in her head. He was hoping to be more than just the labor part of the equation. That's not a bad idea. I left our van at the store. We can take all the food and fit the chickens in the back along with our blankets, bikes, that kind of stuff. The less we have to scavenge, the better, particularly in the short term. We want to be able to get our bearings for a few days before we have to start looking for supplies. My father told me to go to the house he grew up in, an old brick house. I know where it is. It has a wood stove and, like, four fireplaces. There's a pond right down the street. Greg took a bite of toast. My family has a small cottage on another lake, but it's remote, way outside of town. We would be stuck if it snowed. It's winterized, sits on a lake. It has a wood stove that heats the entire place. If we had our food with us, it would work. But I'd rather stay in town. Greg was contributing for the first time. It made him feel good. He relied on Rebecca's work since arriving. Let's walk over to my old store, figure out what we want to take, and start packing up the van. It takes diesel, but the tank is full. Hanover is not far away. We'll have enough fuel to get there and back here if something bad happens. Worst case, we scavenge a vehicle up there. I'm sure there are plenty of cars. Rebecca pulled out a legal pad and started making a list of items she wanted to take. Could you put Greg and Greg's backpack on there? That has my contributions covered. Rebecca smiled, but she was not amused. Serious things were serious. Joking while working was not her thing. She focused and got her jobs done. She knew Greg would get his work done, but probably not as quickly or as efficiently as she got her work done. Part of Rebecca's wiring made her serious. Greg was focused and determined, but he was 14. He acted like a sophomore in high school. He made jokes, goofed around, procrastinated every once in a while. Greg was considered the serious one of his friends, his family, pretty much everyone he knew, until he met Rebecca. You clean up. I'll keep working on the list. We know what we need. I'm making this so we can check things off when we put them in the truck. Greg let her do her thing. He put the paper plates and plastic forks into a bag and walked out to the trash. It was a cold and gloomy day, classic weather for New England in November. It was well past the first frost. All the leaves were off the trees.
Their newer subdivision had no trees and no leaves to rake. As Greg's eye moved towards the older neighborhoods, he saw the yards and streets covered in browns, yellows, reds, and oranges that should have been raked, bagged, and picked up long ago. Tall grass poked through the leaves, evidence that the lawns were unkempt before the leaves fell. Greg turned to go back inside. He neglected to wear a coat, and the short walk outside gave him a chill. Rebecca was on the porch in her coat, holding car keys.
"Now that I don't have to conserve fuel, let's take the car. It's not far to the store, but it's cold and I don't want to walk." She jiggled the keys. "I also need to practice my driving if I'm going to make it all the way to Hanover."
"Practice?" Greg replied in a tone that relayed question as well as concern.
"Just get your coat and let's go. We're burning daylight."
Greg did as he was told. He grabbed a coat, jumped in the SUV, and buckled his seatbelt. The garage door was closed. Rebecca sat in the driver's seat.
"Well?" she asked.
"Well, what? I'm here, ready to go," Greg told her.
"I can press the garage door opener as many times as you'd like. It's not going to work. Could you please pull the garage open so we can leave? I mean, is chivalry dead?"
She looked at him impatiently.
"Oh, yeah. Hey, let me get it."
He unbuckled and jumped out of the truck to open the door. When he was back in his seat, he apologized.
"Okay, sorry. Now we're good."
Rebecca turned the key and put the small SUV into reverse. She slowly took her foot off the brake and the vehicle backed out of the garage. There was a small downslope to the driveway, and the SUV picked up speed. Rebecca did not panic, but she did not respond quickly enough. She spun the wheel to turn the speeding car towards the store. She and Greg rocked to their side, out of control as the SUV spun. Rebecca slammed on the brakes and the teens whipped forward. Greg almost hit his head on the dash.
"Whoa,"
Greg blurted. Rebecca maintained her composure.
"Sorry about that. I'm a little rusty.
To be honest, I'm also not that great a driver. Now you know the real reason we rode the bikes to the barn." She gave Greg a shoulder shrug before sliding the gear shift into drive and pulling her foot off the brake. They jerked forward and backwards as Rebecca practiced her driving. The store was a mile away from their house. It was a good-sized grocery, but not the size of the large box stores. Greg was reminded of the family-owned marts that served island and beach communities up and down the southern coast, stores with six aisles, a meat counter, and basic items.
"I already took everything out of the store. We just need the van. It's pretty dark in there, or I would show you around. I used to work in it with my parents almost every day after school or volleyball practice. It's nothing fancy, but it made a living. My father loved feeding the community, talking to people about the local happenings. It was a great store."
Greg looked for sadness in her voice, but Rebecca was happy when she spoke of her old life with her parents. She parked the SUV next to the van and walked over to the delivery truck. The keys were on the seat where Rebecca left them. A sofa cushion was propped against the back of the driver's seat.
"The seat doesn't move, and I can't reach the pedals. Don't worry, I can drive it. I'm actually better at this truck than I am that SUV. It has less power. I don't jerk forward and back as much."
She cranked up the van, told Greg to jump in, and they were on their way back to the house. Rebecca was right. She was better at driving the van than she was the SUV. The progress was slow but smooth. She backed the van against the garage, and they spent the rest of the day loading food, water, and a spare chicken coop into the back. A metal ramp extended from the bottom of the truck. Greg was strong enough to pull large dollies of goods into the back. Greg convinced Rebecca there was a bike store and five or more camping outfitter stores in the Hanover area. Food, animals, clothes, blankets, and a few days of firewood were the only necessities. They worked quickly and had the van loaded by late afternoon. They sat down on the hearth to enjoy dinner, Rebecca with her back to the fire, Greg on the couch opposite her. It was 6:30 p.m. The sun was down. They were ready to leave tomorrow, ahead of Rebecca's schedule.
"I'll miss my hometown, but I'm glad to be leaving. There are too many memories here.
I need a new start.
It was another reason she agreed to move to Hanover. Concord reminded her of her parents and how their bodies were in a house just a few blocks away.
I don't think this is a mistake for Team Greg and Rebecca. I really don't. If it doesn't work this winter, we'll figure something out before next season.
You don't have to keep convincing me, Rebecca replied. Let's eat our fried rice, get some sleep, and hit the trail tomorrow.
Greg improved the food quality substantially since his arrival. He made bread from the pantry ingredients to accompany their soup most nights. He made spaghetti with flatbread his second dinner. Tonight he used eggs for fancied-up packaged fried rice. He loved to cook. Now that he had ingredients and a frying pan, he could work his magic. Rebecca was a utility eater. She took the path of least resistance to calories. Soup and cereal were staples in her diet. She enjoyed more involved meals. She just did not want to cook them. It was hardly gourmet fried rice in front of them. Greg made a packaged fried rice mix, let it cool, and cooked eggs and dried chorizo sausage. He reintroduced the previously cooked rice into the proteins, stirred, and voila! It had good flavor and maybe too much heat. He was happy with himself. Rebecca was happy to not eat soup.
Look, if you want to pass on the gin tonight, I totally understand, Greg said in reply to Rebecca's idea of going to bed after dinner. I mean, you're down, well, a lot, and I wouldn't want to keep losing. Losing isn't a lot of fun. I've lost before. Not to you, but in the past, and you're hilarious. Look, it's a card game, based on the cards I'm dealt, and the guessing of which cards to keep and throw. The skill level is very low. It's mostly luck, probably why you are so good at it.
Rebecca did not like to lose, and she rarely did. Greg's teasing stung.
Oh, okay. Well, we can try luck some other night, then.
I didn't mean to get you upset or anything.
He smiled. It's not all that much fun to win all the time. Maybe a break would be best.
You clean up your rice pan. I'll shuffle the cards. We're going to play until I win a hand.
Wait, we have to get to Hanover before the first snow. How about we play until you don't lose so badly?
That was the last straw.
Just wash the pan before you become Team Greg again, all by yourself, walking to Hanover in the dark with a backpack and cold cans of beans and Franks. Actually, I still have that cat food.
Rebecca did not win until the seventh game. She still did not like to lose, but she enjoyed playing cards with Greg. His company was a fair trade for losing. Her worm would turn, and she would be the lucky one. At least, she hoped her worm would turn. They clicked off their lanterns at 8:30, exhausted and excited for a new adventure.
19. The chickens were not excited to leave their coop. They had no choice, but they did not go quietly or nicely. Greg wore oven mitts to corral them into cages for the trip. He kept the mitts on to transport the cage to the van as the chickens pecked at him furiously. The teens ate their eggs, cleaned up the living room, and left a simple and informative note on the door. Two people, alive on November 19th, heading to Hanover, New Hampshire. Highway 89 North is breathtaking with rolling hills, scenic valley overlooks, rivers and mountains. Everything one would expect and want of a New England drive. Rebecca was not a confident highway driver. The 60-mile journey took over 3 hours. She hunched over the steering wheel the entire trip, focusing on the road and her speed. Greg encouraged her when possible, but kept quiet for most of the ride so she could concentrate. He had not spoken in over an hour when he noticed the exit for West Lebanon, New Hampshire, a town bordering Hanover.
"Stop here, on the overpass," he asked.
"What's up?"
"This is Lebanon, the town next to Hanover. It has shopping malls, an L.L. Bean, Home Depot, all the box stores and specialty shops we need. I want to see if the stores are okay."
The van rolled to a stop on a bridge. Greg looked out both windows.
It looks good, doesn't it?
He did not wait for a response. We're close. One or two more exits and we'll be there.
I know I'm driving slowly, but I feel like I've got the hang of this. Don't you?
Rebecca held the large steering wheel, turning it back and forth slightly, her small 13-year-old hands barely wrapped around the black plastic. She put a second seat cushion behind her that morning. She was sitting on 8 inches of truck seat.
You're driving great,
Greg replied absently, still looking at the shopping malls. He did not want to hurt her feelings. She was a terrible driver. Rebecca patted the wheel before slipping the van into drive. They rumbled up and down several hills before exiting the highway, crossing the Connecticut River and driving up a steep hill on Wheelock Street into Hanover, New Hampshire. The sun was shining as they reached the center of town. They stopped at the top of a hill where Wheelock Street intersected with Main Street. Downtown Hanover stretched towards their right. Dartmouth College began to their left and front. The Dartmouth College green sat off their left front bumper. The green was a large open area slightly larger than a football field and in the middle of the campus. The normally trimmed grass grew out of control. Deep drifts of leaves covered the open field and much of the campus. Aside from the landscaping, the college and town were intact. There did not appear to be looting or destruction. Hanover was pristine and preserved. They idled at the corner of Wheelock and Main Street for a few minutes until Rebecca spoke.
It looks like people fled or died in their homes. I don't see any looting or damage. It just looks empty.
There aren't that many people up here. If the tourists didn't come and the college students weren't here, it would just be the people of the town. And again, there aren't that many of them. Greg visited his grandparents in the summer between terms at the college. The town was not crowded when the college was out of session.
It's only noon. We have a lot of time to find your father's house, and most importantly, find more firewood. We need to stock up immediately. We can live off the food in the truck all winter, but we have to find firewood to survive.
Rebecca turned to Greg while she spoke. He was staring straight ahead down Wheelock Street. Greg's face was long. He was silent as he looked through the van's windshield.
What's wrong? Rebecca asked.
I'm trying to get my bearings. I think we take a left here, or the next street, I mean. This is a one-way. Not that we have to worry about going the wrong way. So, yes, take a left here.
Greg stumbled through his words as he fought back emotions.
Seriously? What's wrong?
Rebecca asked again. Greg blinked his eyes before turning to look at her. A tear rolled down his face. His other eye was glassy.
I thought someone would be here. I didn't think I'd be the first one. I thought my dad would be up here with my brothers. I thought there would be a sign at the top of this hill or smoke visible from a house. I don't know why, I just thought, you know, if he was alive, he'd be up here.
Greg's eyes dropped tears down his face.
They're dead, aren't they? I'm the only one alive. Everyone is dead.
He sat expressionless, tracks showing on his dirty face. Greg realized for the first time he may be the lone survivor of his family.
I don't know. Your dad said he'd be here in the spring. It's only November. Maybe it didn't kill everyone in South Carolina right away and he couldn't leave. Maybe he got caught by the police. We don't write them off until summer. Remember our deal? You believe for the both of us. I keep you alive.
She put her hand on his leg.
We can do this. We need to find the house and set up. It's going to be cold tonight. We need fire. We need to get ready for winter. It could snow tonight or this afternoon.
She squeezed his knee gently.
Greg, I need you.
He sniffed his nose loudly. Rebecca reached into her pocket and gave him a tissue.
Okay.
He sniffed again.
Okay. Drive up to the next road on the other side of this field and take a left.
Rebecca followed his directions. Greg recognized the medical school as a landmark.
Take another left, then take that catty corner.
What's a catty corner? Rebecca asked, her face scrunched up like he was talking gibberish.
What do you mean?
It's a hitch in the road. You see it up ahead. This road stops and then continues but 5 feet to the right. That's a catty corner.
Greg was stunned. She had never heard the expression. It was so common to him.
I think you're making that up, but okay.
They drove a short way down the road. A pond was on the right. Tall, tan field grass surrounded the water. The pond was still free of ice. Greg instructed her to take a left at the bottom of the hill. 2 houses up the road was his father's childhood home.
I can't believe I found it so quickly.
I mean, it's not a big town, and I've been here a bunch of times. But I thought I might get lost.
So this is it, huh?
Wow. It certainly is big. The house was enormous, a giant red brick home on a corner lot. It looked old. There were 2 chimneys visible.
My grandfather worked at the college. This was the house they gave him.
It's old. Old enough to have lots of New England winter essentials. I mean, I guess that's what my dad told me. I've never actually been in the house.
Rebecca turned to him.
What? You've never been in this house? You brought me up here and you have no idea if the fireplaces are gas? You don't know if it's been remodeled inside and not suitable for a non-electric winter? Are you crazy?
Calm down. It's like you said, there are other houses we can find if this one doesn't work.
I know our family cottage will work if this one doesn't. The cottage is small, heats well with the wood stove, is on a lake in the woods. I have a backup.
Rebecca could not hide her anger.
I'm sorry, he conceded. I wasn't trying to hide it from you. I didn't think about it. I'm following my father's instructions. I just blindly assumed he would lead me to a good house.
Greg, we are all we have. It's you and me. We have to make decisions together with all the available information. This is life and death. We're in serious stuff.
Rebecca, all of 13, understood the gravity of the situation. Playtime was over. Greg had to realize chasing turkeys and not telling her everything about a new location was unacceptable. It was life-threatening.
Got it. Lesson learned.
Let's move on and check out the house.
Greg understood.
Before he became a teen, he could make mistakes like falling asleep in the SUV during his hike from Andover. He was only hurting himself. Future mistakes put Rebecca at risk.
They backed the van into the driveway, put on coats and gloves, and got out to investigate. Greg opened the back of the van to let the chickens breathe fresh air and see sunlight. They clucked angrily from their cage. 1 chicken lay motionless in the cage.
Damn, Greg muttered. One of the chickens died.
It was going to happen in the move. If we only lose 1, I'll be happy.
Rebecca looked at the other birds for indications of stress or illness. I factored in the risk when we moved. I assume we'll lose all of the chickens. They're finicky animals, prone to illness, stress, whatever. I knew taking them from their home would do this.
You didn't tell me the chickens would die?
Greg was surprised.
Why did you agree to move?
Like I said, I was moving anyway. They would have died anyway. Maybe they die sooner because we came to Hanover, I don't know. But you were coming here with or without me.
She shrugged her shoulders and moved past him towards the backyard. The house's lot was sloped, showing 3 stories from the front and 4 stories from the back. The basement was built into the hill. The center of the house encompassed the 4 stories. 2-story sections flanked the main house. An attached garage on the right had a sunroom above it. A railing on the roof of the sunroom suggested a deck. The left flank was brick with a turret of stairs to the 2nd floor. The basement was a walkout spanning the entire bottom floor of the 4-story main house. A roof covered a back patio area.
It looks dark in the basement. Let's grab some flashlights.
Greg went back to the truck and got headlamps and floodlights. Rebecca tried the back door. It was locked. Rebecca tried a 2nd door on the back of the house towards the left side. The door did not have a window. It was also locked.
What do you want to do?
Break the door?
We can't do that if we want to live here. Break a window? I'm not sure that's a good idea either. She looked for potential ways into the house. Let's try all the doors and windows before we jump to conclusions about how to get into the house. Greg walked towards the left side to try the door at the top of the brick turret of steps.
Duh. Yeah, that makes sense. Sorry.
Rebecca followed him around the house. The grass was long, and leaves covered the ground.
We have to rake the leaves. It's going to take time.
She looked at the yard. I don't know why we'd clean up the yard, but if we do, I'm using a leaf blower. Greg could tell Rebecca did not do yard work.
I don't care about appearances, if that's what you're implying. We have to clear space for the chickens to scratch. We should have a clean yard for planting in the spring, to keep animals out of the yard, to make sure we don't slip and fall on the wet leaves. This is where we live. The outside and the inside are going to be clean, livable spaces.
As they rounded the corner to go up the stairs, they saw a bank of windows. Greg and Rebecca beamed their flashlights into the darkness.
It's a kitchen.
Weird. Why would it be in the basement? Greg shook his head in confusion. They walked up the steps to the side door. There was a storm door which opened, but the knob on the inside door was locked. They went back down the stairs and looked into the basement again. The windows were above a counter. Greg tried to slide each of the windows open.
Are you sure you don't want to try the front door first? Rebecca asked.
We're here. Greg responded with a grunt as he pushed up on the second window. It slid open with a creak.
So why not try?
Hanover was a safe town, with almost no crime. The window was left unlocked in perpetuity, as a way for the occupants to get into the house when locked out.
Do you want to go in first? Greg offered.
I'm good. You go ahead. Rebecca wanted Greg to go in first. He slid onto the counter, jumped down, and helped her do the same. Greg opened a door next to the counter and saw a half-bathroom. The long kitchen stretched out before them. A swinging door at the end of the room was open, and they could see the dark rooms on the other side. A windowless door, similar to the one on the outside of the house, was in the middle of the right wall.
"Is this the windowless door on the outside that was locked?" Rebecca asked.
She walked over and turned the knob. The door exposed a dark room.
"Jackpot," she said happily. "It's a firewood room, and it's stocked. How sweet is this? You can load it from the door on the other side, and wood stays dry in here. We won't have to go outside in the snow to get wood. I bet we have enough for a long time. Not all winter, but if we get snowed in, it's enough for a month, maybe more."
Rebecca did not realize it was an old coal storage room with separate access for the coal truck and the homeowner. The room was converted into wood storage to service the multiple fireplaces and wood stove.
"I guess we know they have at least one wood-burning fireplace," Rebecca concluded from the storage room.
"Hey, yeah, that's right," Greg replied. They walked out of the kitchen and into a large room in the center of the basement. There was a second room straight ahead, and a corridor to the right that led to the back door. Rebecca walked down the corridor and unlocked the door before joining Greg in the main room. The floor was tiled and did not contain furniture. The only light came from the kitchen behind them and windows on the back of the house. The wall on the front of the house had no windows. There were two doors leading off the room. Greg and Rebecca opened both and shined their lights. Each room was filled with boilers, hot water heaters, furnaces, and other mechanical devices. The rooms and equipment were worthless. The far room was carpeted and had several sectional couches. There was a large television mounted on a wall. The sectionals faced the television in a U formation.
"I bet this is an entertaining floor, and that is not the main kitchen. They must have parties on the back porch and in the yard, and they use this entire basement as indoor party prep and hosting," Rebecca concluded. "Other than the wood room, this floor is useless to us. No fireplaces, no way to heat it. It will be nice and cool in the summer, but impossible to work with in the winter."
"Okay, let's move upstairs," Greg responded. He agreed with her assessment. This floor was not suitable for their needs. He wondered if the entire house was too big for them.
It would take too much wood to heat, and appeared to be built for entertaining more than living through a tough winter without electricity and gas. A set of stairs led to the main level. A window at the top led their way up and around a corner. There was a door at the top of the stairs, allowing the basement to be closed off from the rest of the house. On the other side of the door was a small landing with a half bath. Another four stairs led to the main foyer. It was a large room at the center of the house, similar to the large empty room in the basement. The entry room was designed for entertaining more than living. Straight in front of them was the front door. Rebecca unlocked the door as Greg opened a door to a small room on the right. It was a study or den. The small room had a fireplace. An open arch to the right led into a formal living room. A similar archway on the left displayed the dining room with table and chairs. An open swinging door showed the main kitchen. Greg pointed down the formal living room. There's a fireplace, but it's not useful. The room is too big. The first floor was bright from windows. The windows probably lose a lot of heat. This house is old, but I don't think it was pre-coal furnace. They obviously didn't rely on fireplaces to keep warm. Rebecca nodded in agreement. She walked through the living room to a door she noticed in the far corner. It led to the sunroom visible from the backyard. Rebecca did not open the door, but noticed a wood stove.
It's like this house has elements of what we need, but its size disqualifies it. There's a wood stove, but it's outside, or basically outside. We can't waste wood to cook on it.
She looked at the sun through a large bay window in the living room.
We don't have much daylight.
This is our house for now. We make it work until we find something better. We can put the chickens in the garage, leave the cages for them to sleep in with hay, water, whatever. Let's get a fire going in the little room. Plan on sleeping in there tonight. We'll use the fireplace cooking tools.
There has to be something better, Greg told her.
Well, it's after 1:30, Greg. We have a couple of hours of work no matter what house we find, and I don't want to work in the dark. We have to get the chickens settled, a fire started, food cooked, beds made. One night or a week here won't kill us. She stood at the doorway to the study.
Let's move the furniture out. The study furniture, anyway. The desk, cabinets, etc.
We can leave the chairs. I'm going upstairs to find twin mattresses we can pull in for the evening. I don't mind sleeping on the rug for one night, but I'd prefer a mattress or a couch. I doubt two couches will fit in here. We can lean the mattresses against the wall during the day.
Rebecca worked the equation in her mind. They could make the house and room livable.
They had to. For at least one night.
I vote to keep looking for a different house. We should stay near the pond. We'll give the chickens air while we walk around to see if we can find a smaller home.
Rebecca moved books and papers off the desk into a chair, placing a desk lamp on top. She rolled the desk chair past him.
I know you're disappointed. I know you want to look, but today is done. I'm exhausted from driving. We've already lost a chicken. We can't risk getting caught in the dark without a fire, beds, and food. This will be fine if we move things out and find mattresses.
She left the chair in the dining room across the foyer.
Can you check the garage? Maybe grab some wood from the basement? I want this room toasty, and I want the chickens out of the cages.
Greg did not move. Rebecca walked through the foyer to a large set of stairs leading to the second floor.
Hey, let's move!
She clapped her hands. Grab me a power bar or Pop-Tart or something, too. I'm starved. We have plenty of time to get our work done, but not if you're going to stand there. She went up the stairs.
Greg nodded absently.
This house sucks, he said under his breath. I brought Rebecca up here for nothing. My family's dead. We're further north. Damn it!
He heard a commotion before a mattress appeared out of nowhere and landed at the bottom of the stairs. Rebecca threw a twin mattress over the top railing of the stairs.
Grab that, will you? She yelled from the second floor.
She paused.
Greg?
Yeah, I got it. And then I'll be outside with the chickens.
Greg pulled the mattress off the stairs and into the study. He moped out the front door towards the van and chickens. This was not how he envisioned his arrival in Hanover.
He expected to find his family. He expected the house to be perfect for surviving a New England winter. None of his hopes were becoming a reality. "And I brought Rebecca up here," he kept muttering. Greg focused on his work. He broke into the locked garage by kicking the flimsy door. It made him feel better to kick and break something. A sedan was parked in one side of the garage, but the other side was an open bay and gave the chickens plenty of space. He donned his oven mitts and carried the chickens to their temporary home. He spread feed on the ground, filled their water dish, gave them freshly shredded paper, and shut the broken door. Rebecca packed several day bags, as she called them. She had a grocery bag with 3 days of food and essential items like a pot, paper plates, plasticware, soups, crackers, and tea bags. She did not want to waste precious time searching for things they needed the first night. She packed a quick bag of clothes, sleeping essentials, and additional snacks. Greg grabbed the overnight supplies, fatwood kindling to start a fire, and walked back towards the front door. Rebecca pulled the desk a few inches at a time out of the study and towards the dining room. There was a second mattress at the bottom of the stairs. "Did you get the wood?" she asked. "Sheesh, give me a minute. I've done everything else." He set the bags on the ground and helped her with the desk. At 4:30, the sun was behind the mountains surrounding Hanover, and daylight was fading. The temporary study was set up. The fire cast warmth and light throughout the small room. Unlike the Concord house, where the living room was too large to adequately heat with a single fireplace, the small study was toasty. "I like it in here," Rebecca said. "It's not perfect, but it's cozy." She sat in one of the lounge chairs they placed next to the fire. A warm mug of soup rested between her hands. She sipped the broth before eating the noodles, chicken, and vegetables. "I'm sorry I brought you up here," Greg told her. "This was a mistake. I don't know why I thought they were alive. You're right. I'm being stupid, and I'm taking risks with both of our lives. Alive or not, I did not expect your family to be here. Your younger brother? Craig. This may sound harsh, but your father can't risk his own life, your older brother's life, and the life of a young boy. Coming up here for the winter? Getting stuck in a snowstorm in New York or Boston? It's too risky. He told you he'd be up in the spring because it's the safest time to travel. Sit tight, Greg Dixon. We'll figure out where to live. Keep believing in your family, and I'll keep us alive." "I believe you," Greg said softly. "You believe they're alive?" she asked. "No. I believe you can keep me alive." He reached out and touched her hand. "Thank you." Rebecca felt her face grow hot as she held Greg's hand. She hoped her palm was not too sweaty. They sat by the fire silently until she let go of his hand and went to her mattress to go to sleep. 20. "What's a coach house?" Rebecca asked. "Is that another made-up Greg expression like catty corner?" "No, Ms. I grew up in a subdivision. A coach house is a small house behind a larger residence, used for servants or guests. I bet we can find one around here that has a fireplace or even a wood stove. Coach houses are one room with maybe a separate bedroom. It would be tiny. We could heat it with fire." "Lead the way," Rebecca said. "Should we call this day one or day two in Hanover? I feel like this is day two, but we started in Concord yesterday." Greg made idle chatter as they walked down Choate Road towards the pond at the end of the street. "Day two. Definitely day two," she told him. "I hope our chickens make it to day three." She found 2 more dead chickens when she tried to collect eggs that morning. Her coop of 10 was down to 7. She consoled Greg by telling him she expected the chickens to die during the winter anyway. It was a white lie. Greg was depressed enough about not finding his family and the failed house. He did not need to feel responsible for dead chickens. They stood at the end of the street and looked towards both sides of the water. There were houses on the right side of the pond, but none on the left. Houses on the left side were across a street and up a hill. It was a large pond, probably 300 or 400 yards from top to bottom and 150 yards across. I want to live on the water if possible, not across the street. Greg pointed right, and they walked towards the homes with direct pond access. They arrived at the previously discussed catty corner. Town was to the right, the medical school was in front of them, and a road named Rope Ferry stretched off to their left. Greg and Rebecca turned left and walked towards the first house. The first two homes they entered were remodeled with large rooms, high ceilings, and open concepts. The houses were not designed for life without central heating or electricity.
I doubt any of these houses are going to work. That last one had gas fireplaces.
Rebecca was not worried, but three houses into their search, she was frustrated. Each house took them a little over a half hour to search. They had to find a way into the house, check for a corpse smell, walk around and talk about the positives and negatives. Rebecca searched the kitchens for food, placing supplies in boxes or bags at the now unlocked doors for retrieval later in the week or month. The experience might have been enjoyable, were it not a search for life-and-death accommodations.
"We have to keep looking. Are you warm enough? Do you want to stop and rest?"
Greg pulled the cereal bar from his pocket, one of many they found in the last home.
"I'm fine," she told him. "Let's push forward."
At 3 p.m., they were back in the Choate Road study, holding their hands by the fire, trying to gain feeling back in their fingers and toes.
"Maybe we should take a break tomorrow, check out the town for supplies, see if there's food."
Rebecca did not want to discuss their failed day.
"I need to focus on the positives," Greg told her. "We're safe and warm. We found another few months of food. You found that couch."
"That couch is awesome," Rebecca agreed. "We can survive in here, store food in the living room, thaw snow for water. If we need it to, this study will keep us alive." I'm not sure what I was expecting, but I'll admit it was more than this tiny room.
"I wasn't," she told him. "Did you see where I was living in Concord? This is a step up, not because it's nicer, but because it's smaller and will heat from the single fireplace. It's going to get cold in here, but we can keep it above freezing. Maybe keep it in the 60s with the fire."
"You're right. The rest of the house is useless for living, but it's great storage. We can put wood in the dining room or downstairs, out of the snow and wind. We can live through the winter here, but..." She smiled. "That doesn't mean I don't want to upgrade."
"I feel like I should keep apologizing to you. The chickens are dying. We're further north and a few degrees colder. I really screwed up."
"Stop it. Just stop it, Greg." Rebecca's voice was stern. "Let's get one thing straight. I don't do anything I don't want to do. I made the decision to leave Concord and come to Hanover. I know we will make it through the winter. We will see if your family is alive, and we'll make decisions based on that information. You did not bring me up here against my will. We are a team. Do not apologize to me again."
"It's just, you had..."
"I had what? A house I couldn't heat? I was alone? I ate soup and cereal?
We're fine, and we'll make whatever we need to work. I'm done talking about coming to Hanover as a mistake. Stop apologizing and stop whining."
Greg cracked a smile. "I didn't think I was whining."
"Well, you are. Whining does us no good. If there's one thing I hate more than anything, it's whining. Tomorrow, we will walk into town. We go to the local real estate offices and look for a house that will work for us. We look for listings with wood stoves. We look for green homes with solar power. We take control."
She finished her soup with a slurp.
"I'm tired. I'm going to bed."
"When you wake up tomorrow, I want you ready to work and with a better attitude, Greg Dixon."
"Yes, ma'am," Greg replied.
He stopped himself and lowered his head, still smiling.
"Rebecca, it's 3 in the afternoon.
Greg began to laugh.
"It's a little early to call it a night."
Greg's eyes opened when the study door shut. Rebecca returned from feeding the chickens. "Something tried to get into the garage and eat our chickens," she told him. "Maybe a fox or a fisher cat."